Please can you remind me if you're as you be so kind, staring out into space, asking God to hear my case, trying to think of all things past. How long will my memory last? The purple angel. Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks Radio. I am the host and founder, Lori LeBay, and I'm also a daughter of a mother who lived with dementia symptoms for 30 years. Yep, you heard that right, 30 years. And so her disease really changed my life. Biggest gift I'll ever receive. And so I started Alzheimer Speaks as an advocacy-based company to provide multiple platforms to shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort around the world. You see, I thought as I was going through this, there has to be more resources. There have to be others like myself and my family going through this. And to no surprise at all, I found many, many people dealing with dementia and looking for answers. And so we try to raise everyone's voice. So if you are a person living with symptoms, if you are a family caring for somebody, if you are a business professional, maybe you're an author, a singer, a songwriter, movie director, we welcome everybody here because we know no one has all the answers, and every family and every individual needs different things at different times, and we have the right to choice. And so I love my job. I get to talk to people all around the world, and today we are going to be talking with a renowned speaker, Janie Jason. But before I introduce her, I always like to just, again, thank our audience because we wouldn't even be on the map book without you guys. You see, your likes, your clicks, and your shares have just really spread the word of our work, and I can't thank you enough for that. And so, you know, think about maybe being a guest too, because if you're listening, you probably have a story that might help others out, and we would love to be able to help you share that story. Now, again, before I introduce Janie, I want to give a couple shout-outs. One is to the Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation. They take a holistic approach, so they look at diet and exercise and meditation and all of those types of things, and they're just doing a wonderful job. They have been going at this for a long, long time, and you can find more information about their educational programs and products at alzheimersprevention.org. That's alzheimersprevention.org. I also want to give a shout out to Calendar Cards, which has a memory system that is created to help people with dementia live more independently. And they have also so graciously created the Memory Cafe Directory. And not only is it U.S., but now they've started building the directory for other countries as well because it has just been so well embraced, and it's an easy system. So if you have a Memory Cafe that's not registered, excuse me, please go to memorycafedirectory.com, or if you're looking to see if there's one near you, again, just go to memorycafedirectory.com, which is hosted by Calendar Cards, and you'll find the answer right there. Last one I want to give a shout out to is the Purple Table Reservations. This is a really cool program where they are trying to get restaurants on board to train so that if someone who has dementia or post-traumatic stress or autism can still be out in their community but have staff that understand their conditions and their needs. And it's a wonderful, wonderful organization. They have an app where you can search to see where in the U.S. is where they're focusing right now, where in the U.S. there are restaurants, and they need more because they're getting people who want to make reservations all around the country. So we need to help them onboard a restaurant. And you can go to purpletables.com to get more information about that program. But it's an absolutely fantastic system. Now, I want to introduce Janie Jason. She is personally a very, very good friend and mentor of mine. She's an inspirational speaker who has touched so many lives over the years. And she was honored by the National Speakers Association, what's called the CSP, which is a Certified Speaking Professional Award. She she was also awarded the Legends Award. And, you know, these awards don't go out to very many people. In fact, with the CPS or CSP, I believe it's under 1% of the speakers who have gotten that designation. So she is just a fabulous person with a big heart. She is what I call a lifter of spirits, one who is always looking for the good in others and make sure to tell them what she sees. A lot of us see that good, but we don't take that extra step, and Janie does that. And, you know, I can't stop there because she is also an award-winning author of The Littlest Christmas Tree, which sold 2 million copies, and she's now relaunched that book so it can be used as a fundraiser, which we're going to talk about a little bit here in our program. Now, on top of all that, Janie was also the only child of two parents who suffered from dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Yep, not one, but two. And she's going to talk about her journey and how that has changed her as a person through her caring. And, you know, one of her goals in this period of her life is really to give back to others because she knows how difficult this time can be. So welcome, Janie.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori. Good work you're doing for a long time. God bless you.
Well, I'm so excited. We've talked about having you on the show for like ever, and we finally made it happen. And so I'm very excited. I want, before we kind of get into our line of questioning, I always like to ask people if they wouldn't mind sharing a little bit more of their personal story. So if you can tell people a little bit about your journey with your mom and dad and, you know, the time period that happened over.
Sure. I was at the peak of my speaking career, just really rocking it and so excited, and I'm an only child, when suddenly I got a phone call from the Milwaukee area from a neighbor, and I live in Minneapolis, so we're talking 500 miles away, and the neighbor said, there's something wrong, you know, your mother is, there's odd things happening over there. So it started a giant investigation, and it ended up with me seeing both parents, my dad, who was very confused, and my mother, who looked like she was okay, but the minute we got him removed, she was out there someplace too mentally. So it was a very, very difficult time. I had no idea what this was about, because we're talking about 20 years ago, 15 years ago, when Alzheimer's was not, recognized. Oh, that's what it is. Oh, so at that time, people just thought, well, is this Janie person not taking care of her parents? What could we do? So it revealed thousands of things that I never thought I would see. And getting ready for your call today, I was laughing because I had written many things. I had written a book about page after page about how this thing evolved with my mother and father. And I thought one of the funniest things was, I finally got home, you know, and was looking at my mother, and I said, well, what about, and da-da-da-da, and she was talking about my dad, and she said, well, I said, Mom, Daddy's gone to heaven. This was after he passed. And she said, well, not him, but the duplicate. And I thought, well, so there's apparently a same person mimicking him. And she thought that person was in the attic sleeping in the old double bed up there. So lots of things were really frightening and spooky. Because you believe when your mother says something, you listen to her. And so she would say something, and I thought, oh, what does she know that I don't know? So I was into this thing almost 15 years. Mom was in long-term care 13 years. So, and that was private pay. So that, it, there were some really tough things. And I'm sorry to say I left a lot of them out of my brain until I knew we were going to do this call, and I thought, oh, yes, I'll look through all that. Oh, my gosh. Oh, so whoever is listening, this is a very complicated process to really absorb who are these people that you are trying to deal with, and why don't you know what they're about? Well, you can't. The mind is so bizarre that we cannot figure that out. So the miracle is being able to talk about this now with Alzheimer's Speaks, with all their Alzheimer's groups, and get a grip on this is what this is. This isn't just a crazy parent that, you know, in the olden days, they used to put those wild grandmas up in the attic on farms because it was so crazy. So I have been down this road, and it's a tough one.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, when you were explaining it, it just made me think of, it's like a foreign language, you know, because everything is different and twisted compared to what we normally think of. And yet to them, it's so real, and it's so pervasive and strong. And you know, we really have to learn how to be able to have these conversations, and, you know, it's almost lessons in teaching us, you know, it's okay to have different opinions, because you're not necessarily going to win an argument with somebody with dementia, but try to understand where they're coming from, and just to be able to keep them calm. When you told your mom, you know, that your dad had passed, did she get upset, or was she just okay because there was a guy in the basement, a duplicate, or in the attic?
She never really caught on that he died, I don't think. I mean, she was visiting him. He was in long-term, in a nursing home for about 8 months. And so she would drive over there. I mean, she was still, you know, in her vehicle. Thinking back of that now, the other day, and this is off the track a little bit, but I needed to go to the Target and get something, and I got in my car, and I was going down the road, and I thought, now, is it this street or is it the other street? That I thought, well, why don't you know this? You've lived here 20 years. Why? Yes, you turn here. Oh, that's the other Target. So even when you're sort of normal, if you're just drifting off, thinking about something else, bonk, you don't know. So it was really a journey for me because we were into almost 15 years of my mother in long-term care. So confused. And I tried so hard. I tried so hard to make her happy. I remember one situation where I told her, I said, Mom, and we're in Minneapolis, I said, I'll take you to the lake, 252 miles, and we'll pick up your sister in Oshkosh. That'll be fun. The two of you can be at the lake. It'll be so much fun. So I went through all that. I even got a CNA to go with us because it was so confusing. Got the whole thing underway, picked up my godmother in Oshkosh, brought her out. Okay, they had about 5 days, fun at the lake, looking out, da-da-da-da, ba-ba-da-boop. Took my mother back, took my godmother back, and I'm in the car, driving now with my mother after doing all this. And I said, wasn't it great to see your sister, Aunt Jenny? And my mother said, my sister? I said, yeah, we just dropped her off. She said, I never saw her. I said, well, that was Jenny, your sister. She said, you mean that old grandma? she never, I just killed myself. And I think when whoever's listening, understands that you cannot fix this. You can't make a joyful occasion to reminisce over something that they no longer remember. You better just do the fun thing for in the moment.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's gone.
Well, yeah, she's looking for that young sister, and this is an old lady she's seeing, you know. And that's one of the reasons so many people have a difficult time with mirrors. They don't know who that person in the mirror is. They think it's another person in the room because they're
I'm
not
starting
that
to feel that now. Yeah. Well, who is that person with the wrinkles? What happened to her? Yeah, this is tough, and I would think if you were putting into a care center or an Alzheimer's center or whatever, a lot of things are confusing. I remember taking Mom to a restaurant, and we were waiting for the waitress to come, and my mother was opening every square of butter. She opened about 10 of those, and I said, Mom, you don't want to eat all that butter. Oh, she didn't know that was butter. So... And I laugh about this now, but at that time it felt so spooky to me, really frightening.
Yeah.
Who are the best thing of all was the dog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the dog didn't judge my mother about what she was saying, and she could pet her, and she thought she was, you know, the dog was tied to the wheelchair and walking out ahead, and my mother thought she's walking the dog. Whatever it takes. But this mm-hmm. is a very complicated disease. I pray to God we have some answers to this soon, because this is a rough one. And I'm headed into this arena myself. Whoa, I'm, you know, oh, wow, what am I forgetting already? So this is tough stuff. I really thank you for being so involved in doing this in your work, Laura. You've just made inroads, powerful inroads, for many, many people in many situations, including healthcare, because they didn't know what that was about either. Those
yeah.
poor healthcare centers, they didn't know anything. You know, 15 years ago, this was a big mystery.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, it was all reality based. Bring them back to our present moment, not theirs. And yeah, there's been a big shift in that. When you were talking about the pads of butter, I remember going out to a restaurant with my mom, and it was one of my mom and dad's favorite restaurants, and they had popovers. And my mom loved popovers, and so the waitress would always sneak a couple of bags of popovers to my mom, and we're walking out. And my mom trips. She doesn't fall, but she trips. And the next thing I see are like two dozen popovers flying over the restaurant. And I just remember I was so mad and I was so embarrassed at the time. And I walked out and then I walked back in because I had to, like, it's like, oh my gosh, really? Because she was never going to eat all of those. And, you know, and the waitress was just, she loved my mom and dad and just, you know, wanted to keep her happy and stuff. And, but it was, you know, mom's, you know, she really gathered stuff. If it was butter or salt or pepper or whatever, she would like take those little packets and stuff them in her purse, you know, and this time they were bigger and they were all over the restaurant. And I just remember people kind of laughing, but they were worried that she was okay. But I was just so embarrassed. I wasn't a very gracious daughter at the time. And I think we all go through those moments where we're not going to be real gracious and we know we can do better. But we have to accept that that's what we did. And it is kind of part of the normal phase. We're not going to be perfect and nice all the time and not beat ourselves up, you know, for doing those things. Just remember, again, we've got another moment that we can do better in the future. Now, did your friends help you kind of survive the mystery of how to deal with your folks, or were they totally unknowing about all of this, or maybe you were even disconnected from friends? Because I know a lot of times people get real isolated because they're so preoccupied with caring for somebody, they cut themselves off of their own circles. What was your situation regarding friends?
I connected with a couple of girls that were in my high school in Milwaukee. I found two of them, and I needed I needed two people to get my mother out of her home and into the hospital to be diagnosed. And I couldn't get my mother to go anywhere with me. So my friends came and they said to my mother, well, we have a doctor's appointment. My mother went right off with them. So she got diagnosed. And while she's being diagnosed, I'm in the home with two other friends from Minneapolis. And we are trying to find the paperwork. The paperwork of all of the, you know, the things that you sign for banks and attorneys and all of these. My parents were dynamic, people that had dollars behind them and owned companies. And so this, I was trying to find that stuff because I was trying to deal with it when I'd get my mother out of there and get her into a nursing home. I'm an only child. I was not power of attorney. So those two people from my high school helped my mother get into the care center. Then I had a friend come down from Minneapolis who helped me in Milwaukee pack up things. We were trying to do it, but I couldn't sell the house. I wasn't power of attorney. Oh, the trauma of this was just horrendous. It was after Daddy died, the attorneys just took over, and I said, well, I have to move her to Minneapolis. Well, no, you're not going to take her there. She lives in Milwaukee. She's going to stay here. I said, I'm 200 more miles from her. And there was a big fuss over this, horrendous. I started doing things that were dishonest. My Catholic background with the nuns, they would have killed me. I was forging names, and one woman came to me, and she said, now, Janie, you know, she said, I was the top of the pyramid in your dad's water ski show in Wisconsin, and I'm a realtor. Can I help you? I said, I can't sell the house in Milwaukee because I'm not power of attorney. She said, don't say a thing. She said, I'll fix it up. I'll get everything that's wrong with it. And she said, I'll sell it, and I'll send you the check. She helped me. My God, she helped me. Without that, I was insane almost. So.
Wow.
God sent some odd people to me, thank goodness. And, of course, they wouldn't even take her in the care center because I wasn't power of attorney. What happened, why I finally got her in, was I had done a free speech for the nursing home in Minneapolis, and they knew me, and they took her because of that. But the tension... Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just getting all riled up here because I'm reliving it. It's very scary, very, very frightening. So that business for me right now is that power of attorney. I immediately did it with my children. Immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want my children to go through that. But, you know, when you're a parent, and I'm sure people listening now, they had parents that probably didn't, you know, empower them either, or their children, because you have this feeling in your mind when you're in charge. Well, my children, what would they know? I'm in charge. I'm in charge. And then suddenly they weren't in charge, and we couldn't do anything. So there was a lot of spooky stuff. I remember being at the care center in YZ, and the attorney flew up here, and he was going to have my mother sign over to me. And mm-hmm. She dropped the pen. She couldn't find the paper. She couldn't put her name down. It was like the end of a spooky show. Da, 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 da. And when she was through, I just got in the car and went home. I was just so worn out from it. So whoever's listening, my heart is with you. It's very hard. And if you don't want to do it to your children, for God's sake, sign the thing and get your stuff in order, because their children can't handle this. It's complicated.
Well, in nowadays, I mean, it would be really hard to dance around and skirt around with the laws and you know, just the processes that are out there, you know, to be able to get it done, you know. So it's either you get the power of attorney, or, you know, you end up having to take them to court and say that they're not competent, you know, and get a guardianship, which is costly and timely, and then you add all the emotional baggage with all of that. I remember when I went with my folks to get the paperwork in order, and my folks didn't have a lot of money. They're blue collar workers, and my dad was, well, we don't need this. And I said, you know what, Tom and I are going to go with you. And so we did it together. And then it didn't feel, because I think sometimes we wait too long and then it feels like it's an end of life thing. And none of us want to admit that part. But really, all of this stuff we should have. I mean, every kid who turns 18 should have a power of attorney, you know, because even if their kids are getting a car accident and their parents are paying their health insurance, they can't get any medical information because the kid's an adult now, which is asinine. But that's our system. And so we have to learn to work within the system, and we have to start framing stuff as not end of life, but really just smart living. I mean, any of us could get hit by a car or have a heart attack. And, you know, it's not just dementia. It's just these are the things that need to be in place so that things can go as smooth as possible. And when you're in crisis, it's never going to be smooth, but having that paperwork sure as heck helps. That's for sure.
Well, and we have a lot of families now where the children are divorced from their spouses. Are all of those paperwork things, you know, do you want your divorced husband to take over? No, you don't. No, you're doing it yourself. And, yeah, that paper stuff is very complicated. I think the one thing that helped me most of all was, you know, my parents had this little summer cottage in central Wisconsin, and that wasn't in my name either. It was just in their names. However, I guess water skiing comes into this. The attorney in central Wisconsin was also part of our ski show and drove the boats on the lake. So see, that was a very familiar person. That guy knew who I was. He knew who my parents were. He knew how that worked. And he just said, well, come into the office and sign her name. And I did, because I wasn't a dishonest person. But without him, I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So it's worth it to be alive and well with your legal people so you know those people and that they know you. Otherwise, whoa, spooky.
Yeah. Well, and nowadays, because it's becoming more common, I know, like, attorneys and financial investors, they're more skeptical of being lenient because they don't want to get sued and all of those things. And you know, so there's a little tighter scrutiny, I think, on things than what they're used to be, too. What happened in this process to comfort you? Did you find any comfort in this process?
Well, and you know me for a long time, I wrote down everything that was happening because I'm a kind of a little tacky writer. So I had, I did books, I did recordings, I did all of that. But the big thing was my own sadness and grief was so enormous that I went to Silver Lake in Wautoma, Wisconsin to handle some things in the middle of all of this. And it was a summer day, and I was trying to do things in the cottage, you know, fold up linens and get them packed and all of that. And I thought, well, I'm going to just take a walk. Well, Wautoma is the Christmas tree capital of the world. Not that it's that big, but they grow a lot of Christmas trees there. So I got in the car and I drove a little bit north, about a mile, and I got out at a Christmas tree farm and got out of the car and walked in the fields. And it was a summer day, and the big trees, and Christmas trees that are about 12 to 15 years old, are almost as tall as a person. And so I'm walking through these big trees, and my shoulders are rubbing against their branches, and the sun is out. And that sunshine on the warm branches was touching my shoulders. And I thought, those trees are like guardian angels for me here in this Wisconsin situation. So I'm walking in the trees, and the sand, you know, trees grow in the sand. The sand was warm. And I felt that sand on my feet. And I thought, I guess these are the angel trees. They're just going to help me get through. So I began to turn around to go back to the car, and I looked over on the side, and there was a very small tree. And that little tree had a branch broken. And I thought to myself, I don't know if that one's going to make it. And in the olden days, you know, there was such a thing called a camera. And I always took my camera, you know, kind of around. So I took a picture of that little tree and got back to the lake and then eventually back to Minneapolis. And I was still handling the whole things. And now it was November. And I have a deep love of the clients who hired me. I still have it. I don't care if they were 3M or they were Medtronic or they were National Association of, funeral directors or who they were. But I would send a card or a letter at Christmas time, not about Jesus, not about a saint, not about a dove, not about Bambi, but about growing and looking up. And so mm-hmm. I had that little picture of that little tree with the broken branch. And I thought, I'll just get a couple hundred of those made, small, you know, 2x4, and I'll do one page, and I'll write, once upon a time, in a field of Christmas tree seedlings, there stood a tiny tree, and all she wanted was to be chosen. So here's the message, because it was my message. I couldn't figure out how to grow and be chosen. So I write this thing, and I'm writing in the little tree, and she's looking at other trees, and she sees the grown-up trees, and she wonders when she'll be picked, and if she's not picked, what else could she be? So that's the message of you and I. If you're not going to work for Alzheimer Speaks and run your wonderful association, what else will you do? If I'm not speaking, what else would I do? What if somebody's a painter and they're not going to paint? So the little tree is examining her life. So she thinks, well, I could be a shelter for birds. I could live near a family's home. I could, then she says, I could be a window frame. Wouldn't that be lovely? Well, hello. I mean, now this, we're off the track here. If you and I were window frames, you die for that. Mm-hmm. You can't just be growing out in the field. So she goes, this little tree goes through this, what could I be, what could I be? And then in the end, she says, at last I understand the magic was today. See, that's that day at that time, which is my life as a 43-year, one day at a time survivor in AA. I don't care if the world knows that. But that little tree says, so today I will just look up and be grateful for this day. So she says, thank you for choosing me to grow. And she looks up, and that's the end of this one page. Well, I don't think a thing about it. I don't think another thing about it. I write this page. I send it off to my smarty, smarty, wonderful clients that hired me, and they hired me. And you know the speaking business. It starts out, you get paid about $50. And in the end, I was getting $7,000 to $10,000 for an hour, which means I was very good at this speaking thing. I love this. I was good at it. I was fun. I liked it. So all of that was going on. And in the end, I just thought, well, that's the thing was sent out. Well, guess what? Publisher saw it. Vicki Lansky, who had done Meadowbrook Press and had done a lot of speaking, writing books. She said, I think I should publish that book, that story. And she did. So that's how that all happened. I didn't have a clue about book sales or writing. That happened, and then the funniest thing of all was, you'll love this because you're out with a lot of people. I'm invited to go to the book expo. It's in Chicago, la-di-da. This is some years back, of course. And I get there. I have no idea what this is about. So I walk in the place, and, okay, they have different authors are going to be signing. Okay. Well, there's Jack Canfield, Mark Victor Hansen there, do the Chicken Soup Boy. They're in at some tables. And I'm looking at this line, and I see a huge line of people. And I said to the people, who are you waiting for? They said, we're waiting for the Christmas tree lady. I said, I'm her. So I said, well, you know, because I'm such a show-off, you know, I'm an extrovert. So I say to them, do you want to learn the song? Oh, yeah, the crowd says yes. She was smaller than the others, standing tall but feeling small. Oh, they're singing it. In her field she looked up, hoping to be chosen best of all. They sing the whole song. Well, it's wonderful. 300 people in a line singing the song. Well, who's walking by? CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And they write it up. So the point of this whole thing is that personal pain, family sadness, loss of your loved ones when their minds are gone. It's so awful. It's just so awful. But what I'm wondering now that I'm finally an older person is that maybe that higher power stopped me from being, I'm the famous person speaker, da-ba-dee-ba-doo, and said, you know, why don't you just walk in these trees and look at what's real? So whoever is listening today, that's the reality. That it isn't what your parents are doing, what you're doing, you're whacked out, you don't know, you lost your shoe, you're wearing two different ones. Maybe in the end, that's what somebody that looks at you or them says, let's just stop all this and let's look at what's real here. How are you growing as a person? How are you going to survive your life? Because this goes very fast. Those years from when I dealt with my mother and father, those years went very fast for me now. Looking at, okay, 1987, 88, 89, 90, 91. Mom died in 93. Bam, here we are. It went very fast. So that's kind of my story. And the miracle now is that I had them reprinted and we're offering them for fundraisers, which is spectacular. So I have care centers and churches and kids and scouts and schools. They're selling them. They're making the money. So I think maybe my mom, Pearl Flanagan, is looking down from heaven with my dad, the wild salesman of the world, and they're saying, sell it, Janie, sell it. Just get going. Don't think about what we went through, but make the world better for some people around you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's wonderful, and you know, even though it's after Christmas right now, I mean, this is just something that people can plan for and do year round. Because the message, I mean, resonates with everyone every day. Like you said, it's about being present, being grateful. You know, just kind of shifting that perception. And
the sneaky part of that book, and I didn't know it at the time, it is hardcover, and it's wrapped in vellum, so it looks like a gift. And on the back it says ages 3 to 83. So you see, it really wasn't about Santa. It was really about growing on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I love that idea of being able to get it out there again, even though you've sold 2 million books, you know, just do it again and help others who are trying to do good, you know, support their organizations and businesses. Can you tell our audience a little bit more about how that would work if they're interested in doing a fundraiser?
Oh, sure. I have an email, janie@janiespeaks.com, janie@janiespeaks.com. And that, there is a website, Janie Speaks. And then how it works is, and I'm learning this too, because I have never done this before. I did it this winter, which was spectacular. But they buy a box of 80 at $7 a piece. That's the wholesale price, $560. Then they sell each book at $14.95, so their profit is $6.36, which is really great. And the interesting thing is that people are using it I saw a bunch of people in a church. They did it after Mass. That was kind of interesting. And I'm signed them all. I've been signing them all ahead. You would love to see me sitting in the end of my car signing them in boxes. But I think that's the miracle, is that the prophet goes to whoever. So who has done that is the Memory Cafe in Wautoma, Wisconsin, Christmas tree capital of the world. And this is the best part of it. I get so excited. Sue Seafield is in charge of the Memory Cafe. And, of course, you know what the Memory Cafe is. And the people that are listening know that those are places where people can bring their loved one. It doesn't matter if they pick up 40 pieces of butter like Mom or whatever. And so she had a Memory Cafe. And it's in the Kane County Courthouse. Okay. She works there. Okay, so Sue decides. She says, Janie, I'm going to sell those books. I'm going to make some money for my Memory Cafe. Okay, Sue. So I give her a box of books, and she pays for them herself. Okay, mm-hmm. So time marches on. She had to do a little thing at the courthouse. So, Janie, can you come over and just talk to these people? Well, yeah, hello. Now just quick done with that. Okay. So now I look at Sue. She's out at these, like, country fairs. She's got the books with her. She's selling them at the fair. Oh, my gosh. Well, then finally she calls me right before Christmas. She says, you don't know what happened. I said, what happened? She said, my boss, the big deal of the Kane County Courthouse, she said, we're not going to just have you selling these outside. Bring them in the courthouse. We'll sell them at the courthouse. So I guess along with all this other stuff, you know, that's Wautoma, Wisconsin, Christmas tree capital of the world. So they had the books in the courthouse. Can you believe that?
Wow. Oh,
what
wow.
a miracle. So the
Well,
prophets,
you know, what a better place. I mean, because a lot of times people go into court, it's not a fun time, and it is a good time to reflect.
Well, and it takes a little work to have them out. I mean, you know, the bookstore world is very different now, how to make that happen. And, of course, you are out at many, many venues where there are a lot of people. And that's the miracle. If you have a box of books and they're coming, they're learning about Alzheimer's Speaks, and they see something that they could pick up right there that's a gift for somebody, bam, what a miracle. So the money is all for you know, the companies are the people that are doing it as a fundraiser. So mm-hmm. that's very interesting to me. I just can't get over how that works. So I'm trying. I'm learning because I'm a saleswoman at heart, so it's always hard for me to think, oh, well, Janie, you're not taking the money. They're getting the money. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, yes, and we're working for Jesus. Well, I'm trying real hard, Lori. I'm trying.
Well, you just do such a magnificent job, and I think of when you talk about being a salesperson, I still picture your dad in the pen story, and can you share that with the audience? Because he was quite the retailer, and he really knew how to sell.
Well, it's kind of hokey, but I believe that I learned how to sell from having to listen to them. You know, you're forced to listen to your parent at the table. And I learned a lot from him because he would go on these sales calls. He's in the appliance business. So he'd go on these calls to these families, and they'd be sitting there, and they didn't want a freezer or a refrigerator. And by the time we were leaving, they couldn't wait till it was delivered. And he was just a wonderful, wonderful, good person. So anyway, he had these cheap pens that he had made. And the pen said, hello, my name is Henry. Let's be friends. Oh, I thought, how tacky is that? What a stupid thing, pens. So I watched him do that my whole life, and he'd make a thing out of it. He wouldn't just give him a pen. He'd just say, here, have a penny. Just hold it up, and then they'd take it. Okay, like, oh, yeah, what's this, a cheap pen? And he'd say, read it. And they had to read it. And he'd say, read it out loud. Hello, my name is Henry. Let's be friends. So they'd read it. Oh, okay. So that was over. I learned that my whole life. So then I thought, well, I'm in business. I'm going to have some pens made. I'm going to tell this story. So my pen says, "Hello, I'm Henry's daughter, Danny Jason. Let's be friends." So I have thousands of pens that I have given out, and people love the story. But now, Lori, just think of how you and I, we meet people, other people that are listening today are in businesses, they're in stores, they're in all these places. And so many times now, somebody comes up to a store and no one says anything. No one. And now they're looking in their phone or they're looking at something else. So in my heart of hearts, and let's talk about Alzheimer's Speaks. If there is a person with Alzheimer's and no one says anything to them, we're just recreating that stupidity of not looking at a person to see their goodness, telling mm-hmm. them what you see, anointing them with your presence. And, of course, that's what, you know, my corny dad was all about. So I'm a pain now. I'm just really a pain when I'm out because now that I'm so old, I just look at people and say things to them. There was a woman buying a pillow at Target the other day, and the pillow was on sale after Christmas. It said, fa-la-la-la-la. Well, so I look at the woman, and I say, "You're getting that pillow." See, I'm talking to her. She's ahead of me. "Yeah, I'm getting it." "So it's a dollar." She said, "It was a dollar." "Really?" I said, "Well, la 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 la, deck the halls around this Target, la 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 la." So I do that. and the woman says, "Hey, pretty good." I said, "Well, you got to put up with me. I have a best-selling Christmas book." And I give her my card and I give her a pen. So you see, I can't stop this story. If you're embarrassed by having me on the show because I'm saying this, you'll have to blank this part out. But I can't stop that. I love to look at people and see how great they are.
Well, you know, your dad was very relationship based in his sales, and you know, you learned from him not to be afraid of people and to connect and to know that everybody has their own story. And you know, to me, with dementia and just the world in general, you look at all the mental health issues and stuff that we're having. I think it's because we've gotten away from knowing one another. I think it's because we're not relationship based and we don't talk, we text or we email or we don't communicate at all. You know, it's a very different world from when I grew up and when you grew up. And I don't think we're better for it in a lot of ways. And I think dementia is really here to tell us to get back to the heart of being human. And connecting with one another and not being so judgmental, because none of us is perfect. Though we're taught that we're supposed to be, you know, by all the advertising and the articles and the news, it positions us to, you know, to want to be perfect. And the truth is none of us are. And so we really need to kick that to the curb and accept who we are and embrace our individuality and understand, you know, even a person with dementia has so much to give us and to learn. I mean, even though your journey was a struggle, it taught you a lot of life lessons, you know, along the way. I mean, just in terms of getting your financial stuff in order or, you know, being present in their world and kind of letting go of control, because some things you can't control. And it's either going to drive you crazy or you're going to learn to walk graciously in the unknown, you know, and how much can that really hurt you? You know, maybe there's something
to teach
you.
And there's no way of teaching people that haven't awakened yet, that are 30, 40, 50. if they have not encountered that. But the other night I was at this event and there were 120 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. And so I did a little talk there, and then they sat in circles on the floor. Mm-hmm. And their assignment to sit in the circle on the floor was to say one quality that they felt was very important in their life. They went around the circle of 12 kids three times saying, be loving, kindness, creativity, you know, they named those qualities. And that's what happens when you look at another person and you take away the paperwork or the phones or whatever. Then you begin to see their quality. They have to mm-hmm. look up and they have to say something. So we have to do that with the Alzheimer's people because they're not going to be able to look at a phone. They're mm-hmm. looking down, they're fingering their food, they're throwing their muffins or whatever your mother was doing. But, yeah, it's the gentleness, the lovingness, and it's tough to come up with that over and over when you're visiting a person. I mean, 11 years I went on Wednesdays and Saturdays and Sundays to see my mother in the care center. And I just, by the time I would get through the visit, I went home and took a nap. I was just worn out from it. So I know your journey was really long, Lori, and I admire you. I just hold you in such high esteem that you have put so much into helping with this situation. I don't have what you have. I'm too weird, but I had pens. That was about it. And I could write about a tree. So everybody's got a quality they can put out there. And music, mm-hmm. I think that was the best part of my mother and my stuff. As I'd put music on, and I'd dance with her, and she could do that. Yep. And then even with my dad, I made recordings in the olden days on cassettes, and I would say, Daddy, remember this? Underneath the arches, I dream my dreams away. Sing that one, Daddy. And so the nursing home said, when he played that cassette, we played it for him as his recreation, he just would be mesmerized and listen. So mm-hmm. you have to try stuff. But I tried it with my mother. She didn't like that at all. So it's just how you can reach that person. It's the miracle. And whoever's listening, my heart is with you. My prayers are with you. My soul is with you. And I hope you just kind of scream up to the heavens, Pearl, help me, or Henry, throw down a pen. we just need that. I'm just thinking now, Lori, your mother and my mother and father have probably met.
Probably.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
I know. That is real. And your dad. Oh, my gosh. I bet they're just laughing. Yeah, there are two daughters down there talking like crazy. Oh, my gosh.
I don't know for you, but I mean, for me, it taught me different levels of unconditional love. Did you feel that your love got deeper with your folks through this journey, even though it was a struggle?
I was able to do that with my dad, but in the beginning, and this is good that we're talking about, in the beginning, my mother was so angry that I was mm-hmm. really frightened. Her voice sounded like when I was naughty, and uh-huh. I was scared. And that went on almost 3 or 4 years, that anger person. Then later, she didn't have that. And so then, and I remember this, her ring and watch got stolen in the care center. Mm-hmm. However, when the ring and the watch was gone, I could hold her hands because I didn't see them as the spanking, angry hands. So, you know, lots of things are tied up when it's your parent. And we all had those different parents, the ones that were angry or tough or lonely or whatever they were, they had their own issues. And that's hard to admit, isn't it? I don't even mm-hmm. want to own mine. I'm sure my yeah. children think, oh, my God, my mother's such a witch. Yeah, I mean, they were just people.
Yeah. Well, and I hear a lot of times people say, I don't want to take care of them. They didn't take care of me, you know, and yet many will still step up to the plate and then they'll say, oh, I like this person. This isn't the mother or the father I grew up with, because sometimes personalities change depending on the dementia. And so you might have somebody who was really nice who gets really angry and mean, or someone who wasn't very nice and all of a sudden is just a doll and I have to hang out with, and very loving. So, you know, their personalities can change in many ways, not just their habits, not just their words, but it really the essence of who you feel they are, you know, sitting there with them. And you know, just like us, we're always ebbing and flowing as well, if we want to admit it or not.
You begin to understand the times they went through in their lives. And so I think my mother was just a wonderful, sweet, loving mother, and then all of a sudden she had to deal with my dad, who drifted off with some secretary someplace, and she changed. She was pretty angry then. Mm-hmm. And then later on, you know, that all went away. Because that's life, what you do. So yep. You start remembering those phases, and you remember the good ones, and you go, oh, man, she was mad at that time. So I'm sure maybe that's the great thing about Alzheimer's, is that it erases a bunch of stuff. Then your children don't need to remember the bad stuff. You could just laugh. But it's hard not to straighten your parent out when they have, or your loved one or your sister, when they have Alzheimer's. It's hard not to straighten them out. If they say, oh, that tree is purple and black and white and green, you just say, yes, it is. Don't go into, no, it's green and are you nuts or whatever. You just go, yeah, that is good, purple and white and green. Agree.
Yeah. Yeah, let them.
But you
be.
Don't know that in the beginning. Those people listening today that have just entered this zone, forget it. You can't fix them. You can't fix the. You can't correct it. But sometimes the music helps, and that
yeah,
helps me
lots
more.
Lots of research on that now. You know, a lot of the social connection or the arts. You know, because maybe they never painted. But they may not have painted because they didn't think they could, or they were told they couldn't, or they weren't good enough. And then with dementia, those filters kind of go, and those judgments, and they just live in the moment. Go, what the heck? Let's try it. You know, and then all
yes,
of a sudden,
yes.
You know, they don't have some of those fears. And then other times fear crops in that doesn't seem rational, but always know there's a reason. There's always a reason for their reaction, just like there's always a reason for us. So their dots are just connecting a little bit different than us. So we have to put on our little investigative hats and figure out why. And a lot of times it's stuff we can change really simply and at no cost. And sometimes it's just taking time to sit down and maybe not say a word, but just be content in their joy. And absorb that. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I think I made initially, was I wouldn't slow down to be content or happy or peaceful when they were and live in their moment. And that can be a huge gift. Instead of always, I was worrying about the next moment and the what ifs and the shouldas, whatas, couldas that don't do you any good, you know. And
well, that's your gift, Lori. That's what you are so capable of doing. And I would certainly, whoever is listening, you know, maybe if you're a listener and you are very good at this, allowing things to go as they are, great. But it might be that your sibling can't do it at all. So rather than judge each other on, well, my brother, he never comes to see her. Well, maybe it's too hard for him. You don't know. And how to learn to deal with Alzheimer's and in Parkinson's too. That's these are tough because that's not the way you would like them to be able to deal with their life.
Yeah.
So your patience and your work with Alzheimer's Speaks is majestic. I'm so honored to know you.
Oh,
tough stuff, but you're doing it.
Well, back at you. I want to make sure we get our audience your website, which is janiespeaks.com, and your email, janie@janiespeaks.com. Or you can also download her free app, the Talker Janie Jason, which will give you all
Talker,
her.
The Talker Janie Jason, yeah.
Yep.
All it's all on there. That's really an easy thing to look at, the Talker Janie Jason.
Yeah. So please check Janie out and consider doing the fundraiser and looking at her book. I just think it's got fabulous lessons in it, and it's a wonderful resource. She is just a wealth of information and compassion. So with that, we're going to go ahead and close. I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today, Janie, and our audience. And please feel free to share this. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.